direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Have 2 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I'll be on mine. And courtesy of Bob, who is keeping us on the air tonight, he also keeps me almost knowing what I'm doing with some of the best links ever. And yes, do this before storing the holiday lights. I thought this was interesting because for the most part, most of us will store things in a closet, and somewhere in the year, I don't know at what point, it just kind of congeals into a tangled mess. Well, apparently now there is a way around it, and all you need is some wire hangers. And it's actually kind of good, except they're assuming you've got a lot of closet space, so I'll get to that. Instead of just putting the entire strand, pulling it off the tree, and what you need to do is wrap it around a hanger. Start with the plug end, and then wind it around successively from the narrow end to the wide end, and then back again. Sort of like wrapping a hose around a reel. You've done that. Well, as long as you keep some tension on it as you wrap, it ensures the lights will lie flat. It will prevent the loops from slipping off. And once you've wrapped the entire strand, you can secure the last few inches by tucking them under a wrap section. I thought that's pretty good, actually. But then where to store? Well, as I say, the writers of this particular piece clearly live in bigger houses than the rest of us. I don't know about you. I don't have a spare closet, because what they're saying is it's easy to hang them on a closet rod, making them easy to store. Then next Christmas, you just pull the hanger off the rod. I'm thinking, yeah, in your life, in your dreams. Well, so here is the deal. I would say you're probably going to wind up putting them in some type of a box. The only advice I will give you about that is, for God's sakes, label it. All right, so I'm not Susie Homemaker, but I certainly have enough tips from Bob to at least impersonate her, such as six foods that did not exist when your grandparents were kids. Oh, we'll get to all of them, but the one that, I'll tell you what, this would cause me not to want dinner, and that is, yes, chicken nuggets didn't used to exist. They actually didn't exist until the early 1950s when Cornell University food science, oh yes, they give us all sorts of wonderful things, found a way to bind ground chicken meat into bite-sized pizzas. That explains so much. All right, we got Chris in Ohio. He's going to kick it off tonight if I can find my magic twanger here. I've been doing what resembles programming computers, far too many of them. And, well, I'm glad this isn't TV, because if this were video, I think at this point the health department would come. Chris in Ohio, welcome to WGN Radio. Are you with me? Oh, wait, there you are, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
We are. Yes, yes, to quote Verizon, yes, I can.
I was going to say the same thing. I told John I was kind of interested in talking about the classic country of the late 60s, which is about the time you became involved with, well, probably a little before you became involved with Charlie Rich. Well, yeah. I know it was before you became involved with Charlie Rich, because I first heard your name on the radio listening to WHAS on a weekend. Evidently, you were doing some fill-in news.
You know, I know, and I barely remember doing that. I've been on so many radio stations for fill in this and fill in that, that I think it's over 50 of them. And every now and then, middle of the night, when I'm thinking about nothing else, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember being there.
I think you were. I think you said that you were actually working at a station across the river,
yeah,
Jeffersonville.
WXVW, the big X.
Yeah, yeah, and I was hooked on Joe Donovan I just loved his show.
Oh, absolutely, especially that was at the 3 a.m. hour where it got really obscure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, loved that. Absolutely loved that. I thought that was great. And, of course, before that, it was the Nightcaps. That had its moments, too. But, yeah, I love Joe, and I'm sorry he's gone.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I sent you an email when I found out he died, in case you didn't find out any other way.
Yeah.
But anyway, as I said, John, the topic of discussion I first wanted to bring up was classic country, because, as you recall, I pretty much know mid-60s top 40 by heart because of my sisters. Mm-hmm. But when they moved away in around 66, 67, I started gravitating toward country because my father was a big country addict. And that's when we got into it. And I remember the very first country song he introduced me to and said he really, really loved was Just Between You and Me by Charlie Pride.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. RCA. Now, interestingly, on this is that country sort of had a few different phases, and by that mid to latter 60s they started having what they called countrypolitan, and of course it was very derisive within Nashville. You know, oh my God, country with strings. I thought they were going to tie Billy Sherrill up and put him in a closet, but it was actually a major improvement, I thought, because prior to that I would play these Kitty Wells records that were, oh my God, yeah, God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels and all that. And I'll tell you that latter 60s country, I loved it. And my favorite was Nat Stuckey. I am a Nat Stuckey freak. But many others as well.
Well, speaking of Nat Stuckey, you know, his probably was most successful cover was Jim Ed Brown going solo. When RCA was doing everything they could to make him sound like Jim Reeves.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that. But no, I just thought, and a lot of the stuff he didn't actually write, but I thought Plastic Saddle was one of the best records ever. And a guy named, old guy named Vic McAlpin wrote it. And I remember when I ran into him on the street on 16th Avenue South. And I said, hey, I'd love that sheet music to Plastic Saddle. Well, I think he thought I was giving it to Charlie Rich because, boy, it showed up the same day in my office.
Mel Tillis covered it eventually, and I think he had the biggest chart hit with it, didn't he?
No, Nat Stuckey had the big one with Plastic Saddle.
Okay. Okay.
But I love some of the Mel Tillis
stuff,
too. Oh,
no, I'm thinking of another Mel Tillis song about saddles. I got the horse and she's got the saddle.
Plastic Saddle was all Nat Stuckey all the time. And, of course, I love Don't Pay the Ransom, Honey, I've Escaped. And which was actually...
Cut Across Shorty.
Yeah. Oh, right. There was, of course, you know, Cisco and all that stuff. But so many, many, many things. But like the other night when I played Billy Joe Spears, Mr. Walker, It's All Over, I Don't Like the New York Secretary's Life. I thought those were great little records.
And that was about the time I really started getting into country. I lived in Columbus at the time.
Okay.
And, oh, man, that country station there. Awful.
Yeah.
They had a real simple program, and I suppose it worked for them. Well, obviously it worked for them, but their idea was, if you're playing country, you got to sound like a small market station.
Well, they had no. You're talking about COL, right? 1230.
No, I'm talking. No. M and I.
Oh, okay. I remember them. Well, the nice thing about M&I is they had a long playlist, you know, not so great for the listeners, but easy for me to get ads.
Yeah, but
That was like that 920, I think.
Fox Sports now.
Oh, real lovely. Yeah, well, what isn't? I remember that. And it should have been a good signal, but yeah, there was...
Well, it was directional.
To say the least. Sometimes I thought straight...
Directional.
Sometimes I thought straight up. But,
it was in Grove City, and it was pumping toward Columbus. You could pick it up 50 miles to the north.
Yeah.
You know, but it... You know, if you were going anywhere to the west or east, it was gone.
Yeah.
But, as I say, one thing that turned me onto a big DX thing was finding out that WWVA went full-time country, and they were playing it like it was mainstream pop.
Right, right.
And then WONE.
Of course. Came. Yes, Radio Wonderful. Yes, absolutely. And then UB in Cincinnati went country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I couldn't hear them.
Neither could you if you lived in Cincinnati. So,
oh yeah, that 12:30 signal. Yeah, the 80-20 rule. You're 80% between out of the way between Columbus and Cincy before UBE even started cutting into COL.
Oh, I know. It was I'll tell you how bad it was. after Bill had formed Drake Chenault and all that and was consulting other stations, he got this call. They wanted him to consult UBE, which he knew nothing about, and to his credit. He gets off the plane, and of course the airport there is in Florence for the most part. It's not close to down there. He gets off the plane, gets in a cab, says, "Hey, turn on AM 1230 for me." Cannot hear it. Says to the guy, "We need to go back to the airport." And that was it.
I mean, I've heard that story.
It's absolutely true.
I believe it, because that signal was just, it was impossible. It was in the wrong part of town. I think it was in the tower was Eden Park, which was down by the river, and which meant that it was a battle just to get it to Highland Heights, or not Highland Heights, I'm thinking of the Highland Avenue, if I weren't on the phone, I could rattle off the names of these Cincinnati burbs like crazy, but you know, basically it wouldn't even get all the way out to the Hamilton County line at night.
Yep.
That was a pathetic signal.
Yeah, that,
like I say,
that was one of two stories I remember so very well. The other one was he goes to Tulsa. Now, thank God this was on a private plane. He finds out there's no liquor by the drink in Tulsa. He won't get off the plane. So I don't think there was liquor by the drink at restaurants until like 1984. But I'll tell you, back in around 69 or so, there was no getting him off that plane. So yes, absolutely.
That Texas was similar. My brother-in-law was stationed there, and it's telling you some of the strange liquor laws.
Yes, I lived briefly in Pasadena, Texas. I know Gillies is there now. It wasn't then. All right, but it was a thought, though, but it hadn't yet come to be. But the deal was that they had no liquor by the drink, but what they did, you could have liquor by the drink in a private club. And so everything became a private club. I know this because I rented a little apartment, and this is 1969, and they said, "Well, we'll give you the membership included." I said, "Membership to what?" And they said, "Well, you know, so you can drink." I said, "I don't drink." But they said, "Well, you know, you'll find out." And you see, I hated places without liquor by the drink. The worst one for me was Raleigh, North Carolina, because restaurant prices are offset by booze when they can sell it. So when they can't, you're paying a fortune to eat. It drove me crazy. You know, but but Texas was every place you go, every apartment complex had its club, you know, that kind of thing. And all the restaurants, too. I think you paid $1 and you get a membership card.
My brother-in-law said up in the north of Texas, it was basically BYOB. You could bring your own booze to a
Oh no, everywhere.
To a restaurant.
No, that was normal. That was called a setup. And all the places, yeah, like Raleigh had it as well. You bring the booze, then you pay them like $5 for a setup, and they bring you the glass and ice if you want it, and you got to use your booze. And if you're doing something like bourbon and coke or something, they'll give you the coke. But so that's the setup, and that was always done. But yeah, you had to cart your own bottle in.
Well, the strange thing that was.
There's probably places where that's still the case. North Carolina was very late in repealing all this stuff, but I wonder if there are any places left in America. You know, it'd be a county. I don't think there's a state. I'm going to look that up while we talk in the good old USA. That are no liquor by the drink. I'll bet you there are somewhere. Let's see. Of course, this is an AI answer, so who knows what the hell we're going to get. They say there are hundreds of counties in the United States that do not allow liquor by the drink. And
there's plenty of dry counties, yeah, but dry states.
No, dry states, but I mean counties that normally you can go in and buy the booze, but you can't just buy it by the drink, you know, that deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, mostly in the South and Midwest, they say Arkansas and Kentucky. All right, well, yeah, when they allow it everywhere but by the drink, they usually say it's not a dry county, it's a moist county.
I'd never heard that one before.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not a big drinker, although you couldn't tell. I keep a full liquor cabinet, but I never touch the stuff. It's just strange. It's like, I'm going to have guests sometime, and then I never have them.
Well, you know, I mean, you're a country music fan, and after all, that's 3D music, drinking, driving, and divorce. So,
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, one of the proudest days of my life was when the day I found out that WWVA set an attendance record at the Jamboree, which was, you know, Dad was passionate about the Jamboree,
sure,
because he claimed that after he got out of the Army during World War II, he bummed around and waiting for a while trying to get on there.
Oh, good for him.
So that was...
Did he ever make it?
Well, let's put it this way. I took him to Wheeling toward the end of his life,
yeah,
and introduced him to Chickie Williams, who was running the Doc Williams gift store across from the Capitol Music Hall. And they exchanged stories, and enough of them clicked, and enough of the other stories you told me outside of that clicked, that it was obvious to me that he was there.
Yeah.
You know, now whether he ever made it on the air or not, like I say, that could, you know, we'll never know unless some archive shows up somewhere,
right,
where he's listed, you know.
Right.
But yeah, he was obviously in Wheeling after the war.
Yeah. It was the Virginia Theater, but that got demolished about 55 years ago or so. Then it went to the Rex, but originally I remember that.
Yeah, it was the Capitol Music Hall was where it was.
At
the time we were there. Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, I remember so well. You'd listen to that, and invariably you'd hear Hawkshaw Hawkins. I mean, boy, was that guy a regular. And
Dad claimed to be a friend of his.
All right. That's pretty good. And then he left for the Ozark Jubilee in the 50s at some point. But, from that after the war, the time your dad's talking about, until the mid-50s, he was just a regular on WWVA. 11 yards of personality. I'm not 100% sure what that meant, but yes.
Well, Manny was a very tall man and was very personable. But speaking of Hawkshaw, there was a song where the rippling waters flow.
Okay.
With a guitar riff intro.
Yeah.
And one thing I could not deny is my father was an excellent guitarist because he could play that better than the record. He really could.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I've blown the break again. Stay where you are. And Bob is keeping us honest, so he's playing commercials, and we'll go into the news, and then we'll be right back on WGN Radio, which we're not on at the moment.
Had our number changed today, although I hate it too. But each time the phone would ring, they'd want to speak to you. And it hurts to tell them you're not here with me. Maybe now, oh telephone, will let me be. It's not in the book now, so you'd better write it down, just in case your love for me should ever come around. You might want to call and break the news to me. Just call Lonesome 77203.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That is Hawkshaw Hawkins. That was his last song. In fact, it hit the charts the week that he was killed in the plane crash with Patsy Cline in 1963. Went on to be number one for 4 weeks and a terrific record written by Ernest Tubb's son, Justin, as far as that goes. And we're talking with Chris about country. You know, you mentioned liking 69. I think one of my favorite from 69 was Jack Green's Statue of a Fool.
Good song.
And you know, I was going to say, what's interesting about that is about 10 years later, I was at some dumpy concert that David Ruffin is performing at, you know, Peck's Bad Boy, not with the Temptations at the time. And he gets up and talks about when he wrote Statue of a Fool. And I said, this is going to come as a shock to Jan Crutchfield and Jack Green. You know, and yeah, it came out. It was a flip side that he put it on Motown in like 76 or so. But I never checked the single to see if he tried to get writer's credit too. But clearly, he didn't.
Amazing. Well, I've heard a lot of artists take credit for writing songs they didn't write. I mean, that's almost an epidemic.
Oh, absolutely. Now, often there are things, though, that aren't quite as easy to, to check out. That was, Statue of a Fool was a top 10 record country in 1969. I thought it'd be a little harder to get away with that. Maybe not in South Philly, I understand, but even so. Yeah, so you're right.
Matter of fact, that reminds me, my first full-time job after college, I worked with a con man who was later finally revealed to be a total con man and everything. He defrauded the company and everything. Claimed that he wrote Field with a Kiss, the Brian Hyland song.
By the way, let me interrupt you and say, I just looked up that Motown single, and David Ruffin did claim he wrote it.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Yep, 1976 on Motown. I guess nobody checked. And I'll tell you who produced that session was Van McCoy. He should have known better. But I digress.
Oh, well.
So, yes, continue. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting. Carry on.
Yeah, as I say, the con artist who claimed he wrote Sealed with a Kiss, and we believed it. Well, I didn't believe him because I knew better, but, a lot of people who, weren't all that into music believed him. Man, it's just amazing.
And you wonder about that, especially on things like that are such a big hit. And you can actually, and not that it was written by people we know, but even so, it's right on the label, as far as that goes. It's very easy to check. But there was a guy who used to come into Val Shively's in Upper Darby in Philadelphia who swore that he was Bill Deal. And Bell didn't know, and I said, that is not Bill Deal. Well, just about the time I was leaving, the real Bill Deal dies. And this guy comes in, like, it's the second coming, he's back. And he says, no, that guy was an imposter. I'm the real one. And I thought, how does he say it with a straight face? So, yeah, there's always someone claiming to be someone.
I just thought of something else. The second station I heard you on was WIBC, which I didn't listen to very much because it didn't come in as well in Columbus as HAS did.
Yeah, it was one of those 50,000 of the day, but not at night and directional. And the reason I had that job, it was directional. I'll never get it because when I went there, it was around the time that, the FCC was really coming down hard on, have women on your staff. And for directional stations, why they wanted to put the women on overnight, they'd have to pay an engineer because you had to have a first phone to do this. Well, of course, I happened to have a first phone. And I had, it was like an ad in broadcasting or something. And so I sent a tape and I said, female first phone wants to do overnights. And for years I told George Johns and Jim Hilliard, I said, I could have had Farsi on that tape and you'd have hired me. I guarantee you, you didn't even listen. You just saw female in first phone. And they both laughed and said, yeah, that's about right. So, yeah.
Did you know that it's only been within like the last 5 years that Lee DeNoon retired?
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Well, yeah, sadly, I was thinking about it the other day. Everybody I worked with there pretty much is, I think Jim Hilliard's still alive in his 90s, but everybody mm-hmm. else. And there was one guy who came in to do nights, and last station I knew he was at was in Pittsburgh, but Nat Humphreys, he's still alive. But other than that, every last one of them, past tense. And, Gary Todd may still be alive, but who cares? But that's it. But yeah, it was a weird thing, you know. I didn't make a lot of money, of course, but what I realized, you know, they needed me because of that first phone, which was good. But I wound up asking them for an extra shift. And what I did was I worked on Sundays from 4 p.m. till 6 a.m, 3 shifts. And what that mm-hmm. did was that gave me Saturday nights off because I played disco at the Gandhi Dancer Lounge at the Marriott on Shadeland. So, you know, that was for extra money. So, yes, I remember that well. And, of course, having a first phone, I'm in charge. You know, well, normally you're just taking the meter readings. Well, that was until the tornadoes hit. And that was when I discovered, when the power went out, that apparently nobody had been looking at that generator in the basement for a long time. And, you know, mm-hmm. like they're supposed to check it weekly. Not a chance. So I'm there. I'm standing literally in about 7 inches of water. And I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be it. I hope it's a slow news week. Claude Hall can write about me in Box Jocks. But I did not think I'd make it through that night. But indeed I did. But it had been so long since they powered up the generator that initially nothing would work on speed. It was like a brownout. Mm-hmm. Everything was slow. Yes. And so I tried playing a record and realized I couldn't. You know, it was just really dragging. So there I am just doing a monologue. I remember at one point I said, would you like to hear my imitation of the Supremes? I do all three at once. And you know, anyway, the bottom line was that it finally got up to power, but I didn't even notice at that point. And then when somebody came in, they hit it and it was up to power. Oh, my God, I've been talking for a half hour for no damn good reason. So, yes.
So I like the air check of Dan Ingram during the New York blackout.
Right.
They are having the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember WIBC used to be at 2835 North Illinois, and it was you know, a block off Meridian, the big street, and it was right behind a Stouffer's Hotel, where they would routinely have people shooting people. I remember, yeah, a bullet grazed me one night coming in. I was more afraid for my car. But the way it worked, it was like a big stairwell coming down, and glass, 2 floor of glass for the stairwell. All right. Mm. Well, that was fine until the night it was raining. And the rain caused a reflection. Well, the only thing it was reflecting on was a picture that was inside the building, and it was of old man Fairbanks. And I swear to God, I saw his head hanging over Illinois when I looked out. I mean, I flew down those stairs. You know, and of course, you know, back then they never thought about there was going to be a girl. So the woman's bathroom was on the second floor. I swear after that, I never again went. I just, whatever it is, I'll hold it. You know, so.
So IBC had their own version of the WoWO fire escape.
Yeah, yeah, it had a lot of things, but yeah, the WoWO fire escape. Yes, Carol had a brick, and
oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I loved listening to Carol.
I heard you
talk about her, and of course, you wrote about her in your book. But yeah. I did not know that you were his close friend until after she passed.
Oh yeah,
you were really close.
She was my best friend. I talked to her every day. And, you know, it's really sad because I used to have a group of friends like that, and I'd be on the phone probably 12 hours a day talking to this one or that one. Now, no one is alive. Absolutely no mm-hmm. one. I'm it. And I'm not happy about that, to say the least.
Yeah, so I understand.
I expected to be one of the first to go, you know, but then again, the chronically sick kids are usually the ones who, you know, hang on there forever. But I was, I was sure I'd be long gone by now, but here I sit.
And the world is a better place for it.
Oh,
then,
that's very kind of you to say. A lot of people wouldn't agree with you, but that's very kind of you to say. Unfortunately, most of them who would disagree the most are no longer with us, so I guess it's fair.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You took care of yourself because you were sickly, and you want to look for cause and effect.
That's probably true. You know, I've yet to have my first drink and all those kind of things. And I've never I've never understood drugs, because growing up for me, I tried to get out of taking them. You know, I was not voluntarily. Oh, God, I remember in ninth grade, I was on phenobarbital for a year before they could do this surgery. And I hated it because I'd fall asleep, so I wouldn't take it. And finally, on my way to school in the morning, I'd have to stop by Mount Sinai, and they'd make sure I took my pill. But it was a pain in the ass. But later I thought, my God, I didn't realize there was a street value in this. I could have been wealthy. Let's just sell them. But it didn't occur. Found out too late. Because I guarantee you I would have if I could have. So, yeah. That's the way that was. But, yes, it's always a lovely, lovely evening when you call, Chris. So do it again.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you. All right, thanks. So yes, fine country memories. And I think for me, the reason for country was because what had happened is that, you know, Top 40 started morphing into that album stuff, which, you know, left me cold. And then, you know, my beloved Motown stuff, you know, my Smokey Robinson and all that, well, suddenly it's taking on a psychedelic feel. Yeah, right, exactly. So I had nowhere to go. So that's about the time I stumbled upon country, and they had really livened it up since I'd last heard it. And great, great stuff. 69 was just a killer year. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Oh, and we're going to talk to Johnny from Austin in a moment right here on WGN Radio.
Holly, she really makes the season jolly.
Oh.
Deck divinely head to toe, lovely green and scarlet bows, holding me, oh my, oh golly. Oh, when the snow starts to fall and it covers up the town, it's such a cozy fire when that holly hangs around. Oh, what a lucky, lucky boy. A holiday with holly, carol, candy, and joy. Candy, sweeter than a sip of brandy. Peppermint and buttered rum, tempting as a sugar plum, cooler than a summer shandy. Oh, and the snow starts to fall and I crave a sugar fix. She's so confectionary, candy's always in the mix. Oh, what a lucky, lucky boy. A holiday with holly, carol, candy, and joy. Carol, such a very merry girl. A lovely song upon her lips, tempo rises and it dips, dolled up in her gay apparel. Oh, when the snow starts to fall and the nights are so long, carol sees me when she's singing all those old-fashioned songs. What a lucky, lucky boy. A holiday with holly, carol, candy, and joy.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Apologies to Fran. I promise that's the last Christmas song you will hear, but I realized that was something that Eric had requested a few times during the holiday in Minnesota, and he was kind of sick over the holidays, too, so I hope he's okay, and I hope he's listening, and now he heard it. Yes, indeed. That's a J.D. McPherson, Holly, Carol, Candy, and Joy, 2018 on New West. It's from an album, yes, an album, vinyl. They had it on CD, too, I think, called Socks. All right, so, oh, good. Johnny is in Austin. Johnny, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, should it be a Happy New Year, or have you decided yet?
Well, usually I can only tell you at the end of the year. I'm not a psychic, but listening to all the psychics, I don't know, could be interesting.
I couldn't have said that better myself. I really, I didn't even actually plan on calling tonight, but when you started getting into country music, you know, we got a lot of things in common. You know, we both don't really care for movies. We don't watch TV. We're auditory people.
Yes.
And, but the other thing we got in common is we love classic soul and R&B, but we also love good old country stuff.
And there's not much of a difference when you get right down to it.
Well, I transitioned from KYOK in 1966-67 to KIKK.
Right.
And right. I was invigorated with it. I was just like, you would have thought I would have, you know, been a fish out of water, but I stuck right to it. I loved it.
Absolutely.
It's weird.
But no, the themes are pretty much the same. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's more commonality than there is difference.
Well, that's true, especially in the old country days when, you know, the lyrics meant something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, I can't speak to today. You know, if it's newer than 40 years, I have no clue. But certainly back to the mid-60s and the latter 60s, I knew all of that stuff and loved it. Like I say, I would have been a Nat Stuckey groupie if I had more time and was closer. Just loved him.
You know, you had some experience there, and you were with Charlie Rich in the 70s, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, when it was crossover stuff, when the money was there, because I'd been at Epic before that, and then, you know, Charlie took off. And it's funny because Nashville always claimed that they wanted to be mainstream, but the reality is they didn't. You know, it was very much a closed society, but of course, you know, there's no money in it. If the number one pop album sold 1 million copies, the number one country album maybe sold 30,000. So that was the difference. So of course they all had these designs of, you know, we're going to cross over, we're going to do this. But when artists like Charlie did cross over, man, I'll tell you, there was no room at the inn. I remember in 74 when he and Olivia Newton-John had won some awards, and I thought Bill Anderson was going to hemorrhage. You know, they started the Academy of Country Entertainers and all that because they wanted to keep country. And I thought, isn't it interesting, just like last year you were praying for a top 40 hit, so you just never know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I worked at Kick, and they were a daytimer.
Yes, they were.
250 watts, that doesn't mean a lot to non-technical people, but 250 watts had to go on at sunrise, off at sundown, but very little power, but a clear channel frequency, which might not mean much to people. But at any rate, when we signed, I think it was the weirdest part, when we signed off at sundown,
there's WSM
in Nashville,
yeah, right, 650,
came
of course.
Blasting in, and a lot of people didn't even have to turn their radios off.
No, absolutely. And of course, the other thing, when Kick got competition, I think you might have even been there in the latter 60s, but Keener came on, and they were a daytimer too.
I was one of the first air staff at Keener.
All right.
And they came on in the January of 68.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a that was a whole different story, too. But that's a long, that's not even interesting. I'd rather talk about the music. This was the day, though, in history that Hank Williams Sr. died, wasn't it?
Yes, New Year's Day. Yes.
Well, I talked to a gentleman some years ago. I wasn't prepared for this phone call because he was a friend of my. He was a friend of a friend of mine. Do you have to take a break yet?
No, actually, and thank you for reminding me. In 3.5 minutes, I do, and then we'll come back after that.
Oh, okay. Well, so this friend of mine up in, I worked in West Virginia back when I was 19, so I had some friends up there. But at any rate, I knew this guy who knew a gentleman, I think his first name was Howard, and his last name was Janey.
Okay.
Maybe J-A-N-E-Y. He was the first deputy sheriff on the scene when Hank Sr. Was in Oak Hill, West Virginia.
Yes, yes.
And so I talked to Mr. Janey, but of course, my friend was at this coffee shop. He said, here, talk to Mr. Janey. He'll tell you about Hank Williams. Well, I didn't have a recorder going. I didn't plan to be talking to this man. And I don't, this was early 2000s.
No,
and
he was telling me all of, I've heard this guy, and I think it was Janney, Howard, J-A-N-N-E-Y. But but yes.
Okay.
And the funeral director, I think, was Joe Tyree. And he died in an Oak Hill hospital, obviously. So yeah, but I'll bet that Howard had a number of things to say that were fascinating. What'd you learn?
Well, he just said that he arrived on the scene, and he said, well, you people can think anything you want to, but this man's dead.
And he was scheduled to perform that night in Charleston.
So, was it that, or were they on their way somewhere else? I don't remember. I saw a little map of it.
I think they were going to be in Charleston, and I think there was some kind of a storm, and he hired a college kid to drive him, was the story.
Yes, there was some...
Then there was a concert on New Year's Day, and that was in Canton, Ohio.
Right.
And so they were going there. So the Charleston thing was canceled. Here comes Canton, and I know that he was in Knoxville. He stopped for a while, mm-hmm. and at the time, from what I understand, already no shock there. But Hank was already three sheets to the wind, to say the least. And in fact, the student actually asked for a doctor because of all the alcohol that this guy had consumed all the way from Montgomery. And they
well, he was also on morphine.
Yeah,
too,
I was going to say
pain.
Yes. Well, isn't that interesting? They would inject him with quote unquote B12. Yeah, B12 with that added substance. Yeah, the added substance, of course, is morphine, of course. So that was a deal there. Hang on, don't go away. We will continue right here with more Hank Williams, more often right here on WGN Radio.
Came in last night at 10:30. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in. So move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Move it on over.
Cause the big dog's moving in. She's changed the lock on our front door. My door key don't fit no more. So get it on over.
Move it on over.
Scoot it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, skinny dog, cause the fat dog's moving in. This dog house here is mighty small, but it's better than no house at all. So ease it on over. Drag it on over.
Move it on over.
Move over, old dog, cause our new dog's moving in.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. Always like that posthumous hit for Hank Williams on MGM in 1954. Of course, he left us January 1st, 1953. It wasn't a car wreck. He just died in the car. Yeah, I think it had something to do with that wonderful B-Shot 12. I don't know. Maybe Johnny Goin knows more than I do about that.
I don't know if, did you say his name was, I thought his name was Janney. Was that not pronounced right?
I think it's J-A-N-N-E-Y, but I can look that up. Let's see, Hank.
Because my friend that knew him used to talk about, he'd run into him at some coffee shop up in Beckley, West Virginia.
Okay.
And he was an old retired deputy sheriff. I don't know how old he was at that time. I wanted to call him back and get him to tell me that story and record it, but, you know.
We hope
to do things, and they never happen.
Exactly. It claims Sheriff Janney, and it might have been pronounced Janney, I don't know, Deputy Sheriff Howard Janney, or J-A-N-N-E-Y, was the investigating mm-hmm. officer present when Hank Williams Sr. was pronounced dead in Oak Hill. And so Charles Carr was the college student, that's what I thought. And so Hank died in the back seat of the car. And so, interestingly, Carr thought it was a location about 6 miles from Oak Hill, but Deputy Janney or Janney officially placed the death at the parking lot of the Skyline Drive-In restaurant where Carr sought help. And so, supposedly, that's the deal. And it was ruled a heart attack. They did an autopsy, brought about by a combination of alcohol and prescription drugs. Gee, what a shock, right? And an autopsy.
Oh, yes.
Hemorrhages in the heart and neck. And so, according to...
How old was Hank then? Wasn't he in his 20s?
I think he was 29 years old, wasn't he? So I should look that up.
I'm not sure.
I think that, let's see. I love this. So let's see. He was born when? They say he died 73 years ago. That doesn't help. 29, yeah. January 1st, 1953, he was 29.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I had thought. He was so prolific. He wrote so many wonderful things that, of course, were hits decades later, things like Kalijah for Charlie Pride and all that. So
yes.
So many. And, of course, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry for half a dozen people, and on it goes. And I always thought about him a lot, like Willie Nelson, where I never really did care that much for Hank Williams singing, but his writing was just out of this world. And that's sort of the way I felt about Willie Nelson, too. You know,
yeah.
Killer songs that other people would would really bring to the front of the room as far as I'm concerned. But yes, so it was on this date. And yeah, that doctor in Knoxville, I always wondered about that B12 shot, which, you know, as we know, was probably morphine. That probably was part of it. But, you know, he'd been drinking since he left like Alabama or whatever, Arkansas, wherever it was. And so there was a lot of drinking going on. And
wow, but what a legacy in such a short amount of years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he got married just months before he died, and Billie Jean. And I assume that she inherited, because, man, that the rights to some of those songs, you could retire on that.
Did he write everything he did?
Not everything, but most. And he did some,
I like that other one called "The Long Lonesome Whistle," or one of it was something like that.
Yes,
you just picked the really good one right there.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
one of the best.
I was almost going to play "Mind Your Own Business" because I thought about.
Well, Hank Jr. did that too many years later.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But you know, you were talking about the late 1960s with country music. Well, being that KIKK. AM signed off at sundown. They had an FM, but they didn't have much of a signal, and people weren't into FM yet at all, really.
Right.
So at night, KPRC, which was an MOR station,
right,
on 950, went country at night back in 68.
Interesting.
And I'm not sure if Keener had emerged yet or not, but I worked at KPRC when they were country at night on Sunday nights. And I don't know, you know, they hired a couple of jocks to come in and do that set. I think they went country like starting at 7 p.m.
Okay.
Until 1 a.m.
And they were directional too, but with more wattage.
They were 5,000 watts on 950.
Yeah, well, I think there were 7,000 in the day.
KPRC?
Yeah, it was a weird thing where it was a few more watts in the day than at night. I think it was
the transmitter. Actually, the studios and the transmitter were at the same location,
okay,
which was a big, big high-end Galleria area today. So they sold off that property in about 73 and moved. And then the towers went down. They got a new tower site and all that boring stuff. But when KPRC was country at night, this was in 68, and there was some great music. Do you remember, she was kind of a sound-alike to, oh, God, I'm trying to think who it was now. Her name was June Stern. She was on Columbia.
Yeah, absolutely.
She kind of sounded like Patsy Cline a little bit.
Yeah, all right.
She had a song called River of Regret. Another one called Empty House.
Right,
songs?
I think I've got Empty House here on this computer, actually. Yeah.
I'd like to hear a little clip of that if your listeners
Of Empty House? Sure, I can do that.
Yes.
I got several, actually. But here.
See if you don't. I think it's Patsy Cline. Oh, yes.
Well, I've walked the carpets off my floor. Sweet, sweet memories. Every morning I get up, stare across the table at his coffee cup. I've got an empty house full of sweet, sweet memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a lot of stuff by her, actually. I'm not 100%. She did a duet with Johnny Duncan, too.
I wasn't ever really wild about him, but
I'll tell you what I loved of his. It was one of the first things he did, and it was 1967 on Columbia, and it was the original version of "Hard Luck Joe" that Bobby Goldsboro wrote, and I just thought that was the best song ever.
I don't know it.
Really?
Nope.
Wow. Let's see if I have. You know, it's been redone. In fact, it's hard to find the original 45 version of this, but it's just. Just such a wonderful record. Let's see if this is the right version. So, I just loved this song. I don't know why. Yeah, I can hear my 45 in the background.
I'm an empty pocket. I'm a worn-out shoe. I've ruined everything I ever tried to do. I'm a broken bottle. I'm a fallen star. Doesn't anybody need an old used car? I've never been too lucky. I never heard applause. I'm not a has-been. I'm a never was. I'm a drop of water. I'm a grain of sand. Never anybody to lend a helping hand. I'm Black Joe.
Loved it.
Well, was that Columbia?
Yeah, on 1967.
And it was pressed on sandpaper, right?
Well, it's probably polystyrene, but the reality is that I played that damn thing so much, as you can tell, and they never put that version on any of, like, the greatest hits or anything like that. So I think I did clean it up somewhere for KJ, but obviously I didn't pull that when I just pulled this. But yeah, Bobby Goldsboro wrote it, and I thought it was a great little record.
Well, speaking of Bobby Goldsboro, and I'm trying to get all this sort of in sequence, but you and I love this song called "With Pen in Hand."
Oh yeah,
I think Bobby Goldsboro wrote it, and Johnny Darrell was the first to do it. Is that correct?
And Billy Vera had the pop hit.
I didn't know that.
You didn't?
Maybe I do. Maybe I recall that he did. But I remember it by Johnny Darrell.
Well, sure. Now, Bobby released it on one of his albums.
Uh-huh.
And, but Johnny Darrell, as a single, he had done right before The Son of Hickory Holler's Tramp, and then did With Pen in Hand in 68. And that was like April of 68. And it was a top five record.
Oh, God, I love that record.
Yeah. But yeah, Billy Vera had a, it wasn't a big hit. I think it got like to number 43 nationally or something like that in the 40s. But yeah, that was the pop version.
Well, the Johnny Darrell had all the emotion in it.
Oh yeah,
and
well,
I never heard.
He had so many things, like the original "Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town," which of course
I know it.
Yeah,
I know it. And then Kenny Rogers came along and just destroyed it.
Well, right. And of course Mel Tillis wrote it. So,
Tillis was great.
Well, let me let you hear a little bit of Billy Vera's version, so you can, since you said you
haven't heard it. Yeah, he's got a Facebook page, by the way, Billy Vera does. Did you know that?
Yeah, he used to have a nice oldie show on the Pasadena Public Station in California that was, he loves R&B, so I can't dislike him too much.
With pen in hand, you sign your name. Today at 5, I'll be on that train, and you'll be free. I will be alone, so all alone. If you think we can't find the love we once knew, if you think I can't make everything up to you.
So that's Billy, and for people who don't remember Johnny Darrell's version, like say in 68, well, was the first one.
With pen in hand, you sign your name. Today at 5, I'll be on that train,
and you'll be free, and I will be alone, so alone. If you think.
Yeah, it is. It is a great song. Even Vicky Carr did it, but I've got an interesting version by Dorothy Moore.
Dorothy Moore did it too?
Dorothy Moore did it too, absolutely.
I just can't believe it, baby. You know, I can't believe it would go this far. I mean, like last month when you said you didn't love me anymore. I really thought it was just talk. Oh, I know about her and what she means to you. But what about our dreams and plans? I mean, all the plans that we made together. And what about our little Susie? Have you stopped to think about her? With pen in hand, you sign your name. Today at 5, I'll be on that plane, and you'll be free, and I will be alone.
So there you have it.
That is absolutely beautiful. Was that on Mount?
Yes. Yes, it was an album cut, obviously, I found on one of my albums.
Oh, my God, that's really pretty. And the Billy Vera was good.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was.
But, you know, again, 1968, 1969, those were hot years for country music, and I had so much fun playing that stuff.
Oh, I just love it. Like I said, it was between a rock and a hard place with Top 40 going hard, and at the time, a lot of the Motown stuff, you know, the Norman Whitfield stuff just leaving me cold. And so, yeah, I remember so well listening to country, and one of the things I had to work was the Miami Pop Festival, December of 68, and I remember driving to Gulfstream Park, listening to country, you know, getting there, having to deal with what it was, and then coming back listening to country. So yeah, interesting juxtaposition.
Speaking of that, I was upstairs while the news was... Oh, do you have a break coming up?
I probably do. Hang on, don't go away. All right. Yeah, see, Johnny is a real professional here, unlike me, on WGN Radio.
Cross the table over coffee just this morning. My woman caught me by surprise without a warning. She said, "Honey, you talked in your sleep." And then she began to weep as she said, "Tell me now, tell me truly, who's Julie?" With a blank look on my face, I searched my mind for an answer or excuse of some kind. But the words wouldn't come and my mind was blank. Slowly my head just sank when she said, "Honey, you know I love you truly. But who's Julie?"
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Talk about 1968 country. Yeah, Mel Tillis on Cap, another one of my favorites. And we're talking to Johnny Goin. And now it's just about time for the news. So we'll pick it up there. Anything from 69, Johnny, that you can think of off the top of your head that was like an all-time favorite country song?
She's Looking Better by the Minute by J. Lee Webb.
Oh, yes. I don't know what's in it. Makes. You'll hear it next. Hang on. Don't go away. That's just a wonderful song, and that's Loretta Lynn's brother, of course. And yeah, I don't know what's in it. You'll hear, and we can sing along. All that and more on the final half hour tonight, right here on WGN Radio.
to look at, a little old and a little fat, but I'll hang around and have a beer or two. For I know if I drink enough, she won't look quite so rough. It's amazing what a little beer can do. She's looking better by the minute. Well, I don't know what's in it. It makes a drink turn a fellow's head. She's looking better by the minute. I guess they must have invented it to go right to a poor boy's head. She don't look so awful bad, considering all this beer I've had. As a matter of fact, guess I could do worse. I could take a six-pack home, but I sure hate to drink alone, and it takes more than beer to quench my thirst. She's looking better by the minute. Well, I don't know what's in it. It makes a drink turn a fellow's head. She's looking better by the minute. I guess they must have invented it. They go right to a poor boy's head. Darkness of this bar, she looks like a movie star. Just goes to show how wrong a guy can be. I guess I'd better pick her up before I start to sober up. We'll have a ball of this movie star and me.
Indeed. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, J. Lee Webb, and I agree with Johnny Goin. That is one of the best songs ever, yes, indeed. So,
I don't know anybody but you or me remembers that song.
Oh, I know every word. Every last word. All right. I think it's so funny because it starts out where she's not much to look at, a little fat, and then when you get to the end of it, you know, yeah, right, I better pick her up.
You're
before
looking
I
like
start
a movie star.
Yeah. Goes to show how wrong a guy can be. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Can you imagine all the antics we would have gotten into had we known each other back in those days?
Oh, God, yes. There would have been licenses and jeopardies, no doubt. Yes. But that was the beauty of it back then. Stations were only country because they gave up on everything else for the most part. And so you wound up working in these dog state. I mean, you in Houston had a much better time of it because those were like legitimate radio stations. But, you know, I worked at things like the Wild Goose. You know, I mean, it wasn't the same.
They are bring that back.
Yeah, WGOS, the Wild Goose. Uh-huh.
Goose 102.
Right. Yeah, I think it was 93.9. But anyway, yes, a lot of.
But that was Loretta Lynn's brother.
Oh yes, J. Lee Webb. Yeah.
And that's the only thing he ever recorded?
No, oh, that's not true. No, you see, he recorded a lot of things, actually. I love the way they talk about Loretta as if she is from Butcher's Hollow, but she didn't grow up there, all right? You know, they act like she's a coal miner's daughter, and yes, that was true, but they grew up in Washington State. She actually got discovered near Tacoma. So, he did an answer song in 66. Remember Loretta Lynn's Don't Come Home A-Drinkin'? He did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did an answer to that. I Come Home A-Drinkin'. And so that was, and there was an album by it. And then She's Looking Better by the Minute was an album. And I have it, of course.
I didn't even know all that. That was the only song I ever knew of him.
Well, Tootsie.
And I don't even...
Tootsie's Wall got some airplay. Tootsie's Wall, and Your Cow's Gonna Get Out.
So whatever happened to him?
He died in mid '90s, probably about 59 years old. But he was
really
around. He played in various bands as far as in groups and stuff like that. In fact, he had been offered a contract around the time she won this little talent contest in Tacoma, and the prize, she wound up going to LA, and he had been offered a contract on Decca, and he turned it down. He was more interested in playing at that point, and so in fact the song that he turned down, Brenda Lee released, but he was learning to play the fiddle and, singing with bands to make records. Menzies. Then he went to Sun briefly because they had he moved to Memphis. along the way. And so, but he, for a long time, he was continuing to perform throughout the Pacific Northwest. And then Jack Clement, name you know, I'm sure, from Sun, was on a business trip, and he invited him to Memphis. And so he did. And then nothing really happened there. And he recorded
Song you just played, that was a, I don't believe it charted that big, but we played it a lot, and maybe it was more of a regional hit than some places.
I'm going to look it up, because I always thought it was a big hit. You know, it's just a great
song. Well, you might be right.
Well, I don't know.
I remember he was on Decca.
Yes, absolutely. But
and I've got this. I've got the
She's Looking Better by the Minute got to number 21 on the country charts.
See, I didn't think it was that giant of a song.
Well, 21's not that. But,
and probably you got somebody like Fran and Gary, and think, what have I tuned into tonight? I thought these were a couple of soul music people.
Yeah, well.
And here we are blowing our image.
Well, but I'm telling you, it's all the same topics, so it works for me all the way around. Yeah, you know, I played Who's Julie before, which one of my favorite Mel Tillis records. Just love that.
Was that his first one?
No.
Because
No. Oh, no. Not even close. But that was in 69, and yeah, I remember I had to go to a concert. The station I was working at kind of co-sponsored one of his concerts, and I had to go there, and he did that on stage, and I just thought it was the absolute best. But no, he was probably recording almost a decade before that, because he had stuff in the early 60s. So that was part of the deal. But he was from Florida. He was from like Ocala or something like that. I don't know.
I'll tell you what, you mentioned, we're talking the late 60s, Epic Records.
Yeah.
David Houston had some fabulous songs.
Yeah, My Woman's Good to Me. One of my
yes.
Oh,
you
man.
See, that was another KPRC record when we were doing Country at Night, and
that's one of the most beautiful records. Yeah, Billy wrote that, and Billy Sherrill, and he produced it, and that was, I always told Billy it was my favorite Billy Sherrill record. But that's only because I didn't realize at the time that he had produced Ted Taylor, Somebody's Always Trying, which was one of my favorite little soul records. So, but I didn't know
was that.
Was
that on OK?
Yes, it was. Yeah, and
I
always love Somebody's Always Trying, and I don't know why I never bothered to look at the record. And a few years after that, I said, "Damn, I'll be damned." So I should. If you don't know Somebody's Always Trying, I'll let you hear some of that. But and you can hear the Billy Sherrill production. Somebody's Always Trying. I'm sure it's here. Let's see. Is it? Yes, Ted Taylor. Here we are. Yeah, it just sounds overall just like Billy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's always talking about the way she talks. Somebody's always talking about the way she walks. Somebody's always thinking something smart to say. Somebody's always trying to take my baby away. Somebody's always telling her she looks so fine. Change her mind. Somebody's always trying their best to lead her astray. Somebody's always trying to take my baby away. Every time I look around, there's some new guy filling up my baby's head with all kind of guy. If there ain't enough.
Yeah, so there you go.
So, now, how did Ted Taylor figure into this? The same guy wrote that?
No, Billy Sherrill produced it.
Produced that.
Yeah, he produced it just a few years before he wrote and produced My Woman's Good to Me.
Oh, my gosh. So he had soul and he had country behind. Oh, man, this guy. I was a big Ted Taylor fan,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, no.
When you're talking about R&B now, yeah. You remember, well, we're all over the road. I'm talking about Ted Taylor's Be Ever Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. No, Ted was great. He wound up on OK, and what had happened is Billy married a girl whose mother was a friend of Al Gallico's, the music publisher. And so Al's the one who thought, well, we got to set him up in business, because, you know, he was just doing small things and being in bands. And he did one song, Southtown USA, where he played every instrument and all this, but he's, you know, doing nothing. So Al Gallico got him together and put him at Columbia. And at the time, they just threw the okay stuff at him, you know, because they didn't know what else to do. And then it turned out that the guy walking down, working down the hall was Glenn Sutton. And so the two of them got together and started to write. And of course, they wrote a song which I've never liked, but it became probably his first really big hit, My Elusive Dreams. And
I wasn't wild about that either.
Yeah, I never liked it, but it sort of put him on the map. But anyway, so he did that My Woman's Good to Me, which I thought was a great, great song.
Was my Elusive Dreams with Tammy Wynette, or am I thinking something
absolutely,
else?
David Hughes and Tammy Wynette. But it's been done by everybody and their brother, probably 100 different people.
Well, when I went to Keener, and Keener, K-E-N-R, 1070, signed on in Houston, Texas, that was the number one song when we signed that station on.
It would have been. Yeah, no, he made a fortune with that. David had been on the Jamboree, the Shreveport, on that Jamboree. I remember his manager was Tillman Franks, who was an interesting sort.
So David Houston, though, back in the late 60s, it had one called Have a Little Faith. I can't remember some of the other. But My Woman's Good to Me, that was really one of the best ones he did.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, he had been charting, because he'd been, like I say, on that KWKH Louisiana Hayride and the, you know, the Ozark Jubilee and all that. But he had been charting since the 50s. And was kind of cold when, you know, as usually was the case, when Billy wound up getting them. And they just did some things in the latter 60s. But, yeah, I thought My Woman's Good to Me was... But Have a Little Faith, yeah, that was after You Mean the World to Me, and Already Heaven was after that, I think. And
then, yeah.
Yeah, and then
But my Elusive Dreams was my less favorite.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. And, I mean, I realize it certainly paid all the bills. But, yeah, Billy and Glenn wrote that, and Billy produced it, and Glenn Sutton was an interesting guy. So,
speaking of KENR radio that came in January 68, somewhere, and I was looking for it every time you went into the news, and I can't find anything. But I've got somewhere the little sales deal where Johnny Goen, part of the new Keener crew, and I was going to read it to you. And then they also had the Keener do's and don'ts at the office, and it's hilarious.
Oh, God.
It was written by the man. So the next time we talk about country, I'll have those and be able to read them to you. Because it was that station was, there was a man that put that on out of Lake Huron, Michigan, by the name of Bill Edwards.
Right.
Put on KENR. And that probably cost that man a lot of money, because they had about, I don't know how many towers they had when it signed on, because it was a daytime-only station.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a joke. It wasn't really very good. I mean, they came on with some weak air talent. Not me.
No, absolutely. Well, now there was a, I used to promote records to them. It was like Bruce something or other was the guy.
Bruce Nelson.
Yes, Bruce Nelson. I can see him like it's today. Absolutely. Wonder what
he kind of looked like Wolfman Jack.
He did. He absolutely did. Yeah, absolutely. And well, you know, Houston was an interesting place anyway, because between him and Arch Yancey, you know, always a good trip to Houston. But yeah, Bruce Nelson. I think his last name was Stratton.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
I remember.
And but look, let me tell you this. So Keener, KENR, just bungled along there for a couple of years, and they didn't do nothing. I mean, they were kind of a joke. But they had some talent. Eddie Kilroy came through there. You remember him?
Sure. Wind up in Nashville. Absolutely.
Guy named Jackie Ward came through there.
Oh, yeah. And had some hits.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
One of the many that did Big Blue Diamond.
Yeah, right. Yeah, who didn't? Yes, absolutely.
No, I know. But that station, they came on with this, they had this big machine in there with a big loop of tape on it, and it was an echo/reverb unit. And it was the most bizarre. I don't even remember who manufactured it. But they sent it down from Michigan, and people would call up there, KENR, hello. I like your radio station, but it sounds like you're in an auditorium, Johnny. Where are y'all broadcasting out of?
That's hilarious. No, yeah, a little bit too much reverb. That's unbelievable. Hang on, don't go away. We'll pick it up right there. Time is moving on, that's for sure, on WGN Radio.
If you're lucky enough to have someone who loves you, then be glad that you've got someone who loves you, 'cause her lips that were warm can grow cool. So listen to the wisdom of a fool. When you take her poor heart and you do something to it, and you think to yourself, oh, why did I do it? You may find that the world may be cruel. So listen to the wisdom of a fool. Now I had a love just the same as you, and I was a fool not to see.
Raleigh James, and yes, that's Jackie Ward. Later, 1979 on Mercury, Bergen White did the strings and Jerry Kennedy produced it. And before we do anything else, because the show's going to end, what's going on Sunday from 6 p.m. to midnight Central Time?
By the way, that Jackie Ward, I'd never heard that before. That was great.
It was a top 10 record for him on country.
I missed that. Was he on Diamond Records for a while?
You know, it's interesting, right? He was originally on that Big Blue Diamond was on Target. And if you can,
I'm thinking of Diamond because of the title.
Exactly. But on Target, and then he had like one thing on Mega, and then he went to Mercury. And actually, he wound up with a top five record. He redid Lover's Question in 78. Also had a top 10 record with Fools Fall in Love. But then 79, yeah, his version of course, I like Wisdom of a Fool. It's hard to ruin it. I'll even play it by Ray Lynn. So, you know, what can you say? All right. So,
I'll tell you up. Okay, so we'll switch formats now?
Yes.
You make me want to do a country show Sunday night now.
Well, you know, you could probably do country versions of a lot of this stuff, like Who's Julie? I think Joe Simon did it.
And there's a whole story behind. I heard you talking about the other night about Misty Blue.
Oh, yeah.
And all the people that did that, starting with Wilma Burgess, who I met when I was at Keener. She did me a promo.
Yeah.
Misty Blue. Yeah.
Yeah,
that song had Eddie Arnold did it, and Dorothy Moore did it. Anyway, we're all over the place. So Sunday night, I do it for your listeners who don't know. I do a radio show on the internet called The Soul of the City, and it's classic soul and R&B. And it's on Sunday night, 6 to midnight Central Time. On you can get to it several ways. You can get to it by going to soulofthecity.net, but the mothership that runs it, if you're listening on Alexa or you're listening on your internet radio, or you need the app from the radio station, actually runs it. It's on HoustonRadioPlatinum.com. HoustonRadioPlatinum.com every Sunday night from 6 p.m. to midnight. And there's virtually no commercials anymore. That I don't want them off or anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Understand you.
That didn't come out very well.
Right. No, I relate, believe me.
Anyway, we play all the greatest of Motown, and we play Otis Redding and Martha and the Vandellas and Jackie Wilson's all over the place, and Barbara Lewis and the Stylistics, Diana Ross. We play, it's all classic soul R&B, Wilson Pickett, Sam Cooke, Archie Bell and the Drills, Johnny Taylor, Isley Brothers, you kind of get the idea.
Yeah.
And it's and so you can get there again by going to soulofthecity.net, or if you want to bypass that and just go to the source, and you might be in another country or something, you can go to HoustonRadioPlatinum.com, and that's the station, internet radio station, that actually runs it.
Yeah, I will put links on Raleigh.net, and I will look forward to Sunday night.
Well, thank you very much. It was kind of a quiet night for both of us.
Exactly.
And you actually turned my mood around, because I'm not too much into the holidays, and was kind of weird.
Yeah, but this is the end of it. The Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club has now drawn to a close. We can come out now. We can go out tomorrow.
Are you going to do that?
Well, yeah, go to the doctor. You know, but other than that, what? Yeah, that's about it. That's my big social life. All right, so I'll look forward to Sunday night and hearing from you soon, I hope.
You will. It was a perfect time to talk. And,
absolutely.
We had some fun. We really
did.
I really enjoy your show, and thank you for everything. And good New Year to all of your listeners.
Absolutely, and love to Gary.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay good. Good night.
All right. So there you have it. Now, John said, wait a minute. You're going to leave without doing 2020 news? Oh.
Booze-fueled blunder, plus towering traffic terror, and Pokemon plunder plot. Happy New Year. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Vodka vandal vanish. A daring driver dashed from deputies down a Florida highway, igniting a wild, wheels-whipping, white-knuckle chase that had law enforcement locked in on his every turn. But in a move no one saw coming, the man offered pursuing officers a vodka spritzer out the window, even asking if they were having fun mid-mayhem. Eventually, the pursuit pitched to a halt and charges were filed, leaving authorities to wonder if this was a drunk driver or just drunk hospitality gone horribly wrong. Crane chaos caper. A Louisiana lunatic lifted lawlessness to new levels when a man allegedly hijacked a towering construction crane, turning iron and inertia into a rolling wreck maker on city streets. As motorists scurried, the steel giant became a bizarre battering ram, scattering cars and sparking carnage across highways in a surreal spectacle of violent vertical vandalism. Authorities eventually cut the crane's menace short and arrested the suspect, leaving residents asking how a piece of heavy machinery became the star of a highway havoc horror show. Card crime caper. A D-Land dealer's day turned dramatic when a nimble knave nicked nearly $25,000 worth of Pokemon cards, turning collectible chaos into a criminal caper. Surveillance video shows the thief slipping past displays and snatching stacks of sought-after cards, leaving stunned staff staring at empty shelves and missing Charizards. Police say this isn't your average shoplift, it's trading card thievery with top-tier value. When the cards are worth more than gold, expect a joker to show up. And that's what's happening. Happy New Year. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.
Indeed. And yes, a happy new year to all. And a big, big apologies to everybody who is still hanging on there. That's why we have next week. Next Monday is a full show with Monday Night Trivia. And then we've got another full show or two during the week, and then some brief interruptions as well. But we can reconvene on Monday. Until then, well, that's a wrap. We thank Bob for keeping us on the air and for all his wonderful links that makes my life so much easier. We thank John, who screened your calls. And above all, I thank you. And again, apologies to those still hanging on there. I'm not an ingrate, and I look forward to hearing from you soon. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.